So the big question is this: how can I live a life of purpose and meaning and still pay my mortgage? I had the good six-figure corporate job, but it got to the point where I felt like I was going to be sick every day on my way to work. I knew there had to be a better way. So I hung up my suit and I put on my yoga pants, and I've spent the last 20 plus years searching for answers. I've traveled to the ends of the earth studying with gurus and teachers, seeking balance and clarity, and creating a life I love. I'm deeply passionate about helping other seekers do the same. I'm Leanne Wolke, and this is The Epic Journey. Join me and my guests as we share lessons learned along our personal path of growth and entrepreneurism. So today on the podcast, we've got Laura Medlin. Laura is a 200-hour certified yoga teacher, as well as a licensed marriage and family therapist. She also helps facilitate the Love Your Brain series for people with traumatic brain injury. Laura's own journey with yoga began while undergoing chemotherapy for lymphoma back in 2008. The practice has been a sustaining source of personal growth and healing ever since. Laura discovered power yoga when she was on a two-week summer special, and then she immediately found her home in the Epic community. She's been inspired about Baptiste methodology. She's a lifelong athlete, as well as a mom, and she's also a widow, which she'll talk about, and her journey with yoga and how it's helped her in her healing. She's also done charitable work for many different organizations, and so hopefully we'll get to touch on that as well. Welcome to the podcast, Laura. We are thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here today.
Tell us a little bit about your story.
I will start with kind of where the yoga journey began for me, because I think that was a real turning point in my life. I had experienced loss already early in my life with the death of my mom when I was a teenager. My husband and I went through a separation when he was did a combat tour of Iraq back in 2003. But it was really 2008 when I got that cancer diagnosis at the age of 28. And I was super healthy, top of my game, was a competitive gymnast, always just looking for the next challenge. And I had this sort of mindset that like I wasn't doing enough if I wasn't pushing hard. And so I actually kind of like poo-pooed yoga for a long time because I thought that's too easy. Like it's just stretching. I know how to stretch. I'm a gymnast. Like my body is super flexible. What am I going to get from that? And so at the time I was actually had been doing Muay Thai, which is for 2 years, three times a week. It's the national sport of Thailand. It's kickboxing. So you're using, your knees, your legs, your elbows, your fists. And I was in phenomenal shape doing that. And then I started just feeling tired and inexplicably in the last semester of my master's program. And I thought, I'm kicking butt, I'm looking good, I'm feeling great. And then I realized, no, this is more than just stress. Like there's something going on in my body. And thankfully, I already knew how to listen to my body because of being an athlete and sort of a dancer and in tune with that. And so I didn't wait and I sought out counsel and got that diagnosis and immediately was thrust into this, facing my own mortality, which is a very different thing than when you're living through it with somebody else, going through a disease process or a scary job or whatever. When it's your life on the line, like hopefully you begin to look at things differently. And for me, my body just seized up through the poison of the chemotherapy and from, being able to do hyperextended split, I could do nothing more than sit at a 90 degree angle on the floor and my hamstrings. That was my edge. And I discovered the only yoga studio in Columbus, Georgia, which is where we were stationed at the time, literally the only one. And they offered a free class for cancer survivors. And there was about five or six of us that met. I was the youngest one by 30 years minimum. There were, you know, chairs or a couple chairs. Like, I think I maybe was the only one undergoing active treatment at the time, but I could no longer push. And that was the beginning of learning real surrender for me. And then from there, over the next, you know, 12 years since then, I have just continued to come back to the practice and build on it through all the other things that life has thrown at me. Infertility, ended, you know, adopting our oldest child, IVF, and then, you know, moving, starting over my practice with clients, and then most recently in 2017, losing my husband suddenly. I just kept coming back to yoga, and I'm so, so grateful for the practice because I would not be connected to life in the same way without it.
So you talk about coming back to yoga. What was it that drew you to yoga? What were you seeking? You know, obviously that first class with the cancer survivors class, what did you find or what did you experience?
Yeah. Well, honestly, I think when you hit a rock bottom, you're just searching for anything that, you know, I mean, it's like a lifeline, and that I was fatigued so easily that I couldn't even get out in the day and walk around the apartment complex. It was hot. It was Georgia. It was summer. So I needed something to do. And I knew instinctively I can't succumb to this belief that my body has betrayed me. Like, even though cancer is happening and there's a battle going on inside me, there's at the same time so much that's going right. Like, so many millions of cells are still working properly, even though the ones that were invaded with cancer were in the battle of their lives. And so I wanted a way and a place to kind of make friends with my body again. Some of this, I think, is I didn't necessarily articulate at the time, right? But I know now what that was about. And just relearning how to be gentle with myself and finding that balance right between the effort and the ease, the shtira and the sukha, and didn't have those words at the time, but that was what it was about. And then I've always been a spiritual person. So emotions in our bodies, in our breath, in our spirit all together, I just really found a place that felt true in that yoga class. Like, all of this is welcome. Accept where you are. It's not the same as giving up, like letting go, right? Acceptance is not the same as giving up. It's quite the opposite. It's really hard work to keep letting go, but it's cultivating the gentleness of that and the compassion of the letting go rather than like screaming at yourself to let go or judge, you know, this is wrong. This shouldn't be happening. No, I don't want it to be happening, but it is. So what do I do from there?
You were talking about that sense of surrender. And I think a lot of times people think of the word surrender and think of white flag giving up. Mm-hmm. And when I hear you say it, I hear that it's a sense of radical acceptance for what is, which for a lot of people, I would imagine as an athlete and an achiever and striver, that sense of accepting what is was new, perhaps.
It was in many ways. I mean, it's these big life lessons we don't just learn one time. Like, it would be nice if we did, but I can see in my journey places where I thought, oh, I get it now. And then like something else will come along. And I'm like, I did not get it. There's, you know, so many more layers to that. And having to decide to be present to the next lesson, the next part of that. So I think I thought I knew about letting go or loss or things not going, you know, my way, facing challenges. I did and I didn't at the same time. So the surrender has to be ongoing. But it is active. It's not passive.
Right.
Yeah.
If you could say, you talked about, you know, your body, that there was so much going right. Again, like with, I personally haven't had cancer, but watching my husband go through his cancer journey, you know, I think that there's that sense where sometimes people can think like their body has betrayed them. Mm-hmm. And how is this happening to me? Why? What did I do to deserve this? Looking for that causal one-to-one relationship. I did this, therefore this occurred. But it sounds like you were able to take a different approach. How did you cultivate that?
It was a journey. It was a process, absolutely. One of the ways that I did that is I decided to I found a massage therapist, and she did hot stone massage, and she was just the most gentle, warm, loving presence. And like, because I couldn't take the firm pressure that I really loved as an athlete before in massage, but just being, you know, my body was depleted and I was cold all the time and like just sort of sickly. And so having those hot stones placed on me, I began to visualize. Like, I'm a visual thinker. And so I remember in one session, I had the stones placed on my back, and I just had this image come to me of being, you know, in a, like a mountain stream or something. And those beautiful smooth rocks that are, you know, under everything, that didn't start that way. But the current has done its work on them, and they're sturdy and they're there, but they're also being moved. And so at the same time, they're being worked on. And that's kind of just different visions kind of came to me, and I built on that imagery. And I would breathe. I would do, you know, the stretching that I could, the yoga poses I could at home, outside of the classes, and then just sort of visualize what was going on in my body, trying to find a sense of where there was ease in my body, doing resource work, like trauma work with clients. I knew and understood that you can create different sensations in your body just by what you focus on, right? So it's a form of drishti, but the sensations, I mean, even somebody with intense pain going on, the pain itself is not fixed and rigid. None of the experiences we're having are fixed and rigid. There's movement always going on if we slow down and pay attention to it. And so for me, it was maybe for the first time really being forced to slow down, you know, long enough to see and get really, really deep to what needed to be cultivated.
What do you wish you would have known at the beginning of your cancer journey?
You know, I don't know. I feel like the discovery of all of it was exactly what it needed to be. I mean, it seems like the obvious answer would be that I would have known if I was going to live or not, but I also wouldn't have reached the depth of relationship that I did, the depth of my spiritual life, the depth of so many things, if I had already known the outcome. And so I think the only thing that comes to me is I if I had known just how supported I would be. And because I mean, I knew I had a great family. I knew I had friends. I knew I had, you know, church community. I just, military community. I mean, from all over the country, but until you really experience being rallied around, it's, I mean, it just, it was shocking to me. Like, that may sound silly, but it was so incredibly humbling that it was shocking, and I never got over it. And that's, you know, that's been true. My journey these last 3 years as a widow as well, I just have never gotten over being surprised by how, by the goodness of people and how they show up for each other.
So you kind of led into it there. So 3 years ago, your husband passed away unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. You know, you here you've got over cancer, and then, you know, we kind of leapt through the IVF and adoption issues. Mm-hmm. And then here you are thinking life is good. I've got my family. And then you lose your husband. How do you make sense of that?
Daily. I don't believe there's any arriving at an explanation or a meaning that stands once and for all. I find meaning in the life that we led, in the love that we had, in what we were committed to creating, as a, you know, a couple that we were for 10 years before we had kids, and then had, you know, we're just 6 years into that journey, as parents, and creating kind of a new vision or expanding on that vision for what, we wanted our family life to be for our kids. So I drew meaning from that, like the love, he was gone, but the love was not, and it's still not. And so that does give me a sense of purpose. It gives me a grounding in the world, like that I will always have and be grateful for. But there will never be an explanation. I mean, the way that he died, it was, he was completely asymptomatic. He had no family history of heart disease or heart attack or anything. He was healthy and fit and was out doing what he loved, you know, competing and being in nature, and his heart just failed. And there was no, you know, sudden cardiac arrest. I didn't even know what that was, and the difference between that and a heart attack, until I was living it. And, you know, there were no answers. We still don't have answers. So meaning for me is, you know, just continuing to reach for a life for myself and my kids that connects back to joy, connects back to the love that, you know, I was blessed to have, that continues on in them. And also what, you know, what is mine to do with this? Because I personally don't know how so many experiences could have been put in my life. And I'm like, literally, you know, turned 41 a couple months ago, and I've lived a lifetime of, you know, kind of tragedy. I've been privileged, I mean, in so many ways. Like, do not hear that I don't understand my place of privilege in the world, but none of us are spared heartache or tragedy. And so all of that being crammed into my life, like I don't know what it's supposed to look like, but I feel a charge to do something with the pain and transform it and have it be blessing for other people. And even if that's just through telling my story. Yeah.
And you know, my, like, I completely agree. I think I've asked the same questions, you know, for different reasons, but it's almost as if you're living the advanced course of life,
right? Like Olympic level,
right? Like, okay, some people deal with one little crisis, trauma, heartache, whatever. And you've had losing your mom, you had cancer, you had adoption, IVF,
then war.
Yeah, like war. I mean,
yeah.
And it's a lot. And you know, my belief is we have to endure those things or we learn lessons through them, but then it's our charge to be able to share our learnings with the world so that we can almost help those up who are in those similar situations.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think you said something a couple minutes ago about like, you had sent out an email recently to our IPA community, you know, talking about gratitude and opportunity in there in this time of collective grief that we're all going through, that's dredging up all sorts of other past griefs, right? Grief is all connected. There's an opportunity. I mean, there are opportunities everywhere, but oh, they're hard. And you said something about having to continually shift for out of that, this is happening to me, to this is happening for me. And what is, you know, essentially it's that, like, what is my work here? What is mine to do? And I think I told you at some other point before, when I read that email, I groaned out loud. And it wasn't like an angry at you groan. It was like, oh, you're so right, Leanne. Like, and it was a coming back to, you know, being grounded, like, oh yes, that's the work that we are all invited to do. And there's no forcing it. It's like, we have to pick it up and it's hard. So, you know, sometimes I do better at making that shift than others, certainly. But I'm so grateful to have that, those words and that, those categories to come back to. Like, I know that even if I forget it temporarily, I can come back to it. And then it's like a new old truth. Oh yeah. Okay. Starting over.
Well, and I got that from Tony Robbins, is this whole belief of life is happening for you, not to you. I mean, I had gathered some of that even from losing our son and realizing, like, okay, I got to experience the love of a child at such a deep level and what it means to be a parent, to make decisions that are heart-wrenching, you know, and not necessarily getting the outcome I desire, but what was best for my child. And, you know, I think that in that we grow and we appreciate more about what we have and we cultivate skills based on, you know, I can say losing my dad when I was 18 taught me extreme resilience. It taught me to be a little bit scrappy. It taught me to figure out a way through. Did I choose that? Absolutely not. But given, you know, the shit sandwich you're stuck with, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to figure out a way to make it palatable? How can you get through it? And that's the part where I think we can reframe anything. For me, that's the yoga practice, is staying in a pose long enough, staying through the hard part and not freaking out, being able to say, to ride that sensation, as you were talking about, and really to be able just to be still and be like, okay, in this breath, in this moment, all is well. The next one, everything might fall apart, but in this one, things seem to be okay. Or even if a moment's very challenging, this moment is what it is, and the next one will be different. You know, the vice clamps might go a little tighter, or there might be a beautiful rainbow. But looking for what it is you want. If you believe that you're a victim of all of these horrible things happening, you know, it's easy for others to look and be like, "Oh, poor Laura. My gosh, I can't imagine losing your husband with three young children." But I love how you talk about the love and how the love is real. You know, A Course in Miracles talks about only love is real. Everything else is an illusion. And that belief that the love is still there, even if the person's physical presence is not here with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, you're talking about, you know, when I think of and use the word trauma, coming from my background, like, you and I both know there's the physiology that's attached to traumatic experiences. And that physiology is in direct contrast to when you're in a state of gratitude and love, where that shifts you, and you can't be in both places at one time. So like you're saying, the mindset that you choose, the language that you choose to talk about it. I remember in yoga teacher training, you talked about taking the trauma out, you know, and I thought at the time I was one year exactly, like post losing David. And I wasn't like cursing you in my mind, but I was, okay. I was so in a place of resistance of like, but how, but I am in the trauma, you know, and I at the same time, I felt the truth of what you were saying. And I felt the necessity of what you were saying. And I knew enough, I know enough to know there's physiology behind it. And there, you know, there's science behind it. It's not woo woo. Like, you're not just saying, like, it's not the Saturday Night Live old skit where it's like the therapist just gives you a can of Stop It. And that's supposed to be your solution. Like, no, there are steps to take to shift that. But I was in such a place of resistance to, I don't know how to get from where I am to where you're asking me to be, but I know enough to trust this process and do the next, like try on the next pose, try on the next reframe, try on, even if I just had to like look the grief in the face, and that was my drishti, and just breathe into it and let the tears fall, you know, while I was practicing, like I came to just trust that. Okay. That's, you know, that's my drishti in this moment. And then in the next moment, like might have called extended mountain and, you know, ground down and rise up. And then having the physical experience of lifting up, my drishti totally changed at times. And then I literally felt a lightness and the ability to see something different, you know, I had to want to see something different. Right. But when I could connect to that desire to not stay in the victim, then it became available, just glimpses and then longer windows and then whole days, and it's ongoing.
So how do you think, you know, my belief is that you have to go through the trauma, like you have to experience it. And I think a lot of times people, when something happens, the world around us wants to kind of sanitize it because of their own discomfort with upset or trauma or whatever it might be. So they want to make you better quickly so that they don't feel the pain. Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone who is close to someone who's going through trauma? What is the thing that is most helpful?
Honestly, just showing up and letting go to the best of your ability of doing it right or wrong. Say something rather than staying back and offering nothing. There are certainly people out there that, you know, do end up saying insensitive things, or are not, you know, maybe boundaried enough that they're not super skilled at separating their story from your story. And they want to tell you all about how it's similar or how they had it worse or whatever. But, you know, I find that most people just so deeply want to be helpful. But I would tell people, lean in. Like I will tell you if it's too much, but it's so much easier to say, for me at least, it's so much easier to say, okay, I don't need all of that right now, than to, in the middle of what just felt like I had been completely untethered and my ship was just drifting, to then be put in a position to take initiative to ask for every specific thing. It was so much easier to say, no, I'm good. I don't need dinner tonight, or somebody else has that covered, or whatever it was. Then when someone would say, let me know if there's anything you need, like that's so hard. There's so much depth of need. So if you can speak specifically, just offer one specific thing that you know you have to offer, that's grace. It relieves the burden off the person who's grieving or who's going through, you know, coping with trauma. Just offer what you have.
What was the most helpful thing somebody said to you? Do you remember that?
There have been so many.
Because you brought up a great point, is offer something, because a lot of times it's, I'm open, I'll help you with whatever. But a lot of times I think the person going through the trauma doesn't even know what they need, because they're just so wrapped up in, I'm trying to get clothes on and maybe a shower, right? So I can't even begin to think about the grass not being mowed or dinner or whatever. So what would you say would be most helpful?
Well, it's funny you bring up the grass being mowed. So I do live in a house, and at the time, we did not have a lawn service. We had David mowed our grass. We were probably the only one in the neighborhood that didn't have a lawn service. But I had three little kids, and there was no way. I didn't have the energy or the time to get on the John Deere. And, you know, what were they going to do? And I remember it was the week between when he died and then when the service happened. And so there was so much planning. I mean, not just the emotional fallout of, trying to let even a small amount of that reality begin to set in, but so much planning that just came out of nowhere. It wasn't like we had those conversations ahead of time. And I remember I'm sitting at my kitchen table with my brother and my dad, and we're going over funeral plans, and I hear a lawnmower outside. I was like, what is that? And one of our male friends from church just showed up with his lawnmower. Didn't even call ahead, didn't ask, just showed up and mowed the grass. And there were so many examples of that, I mean, it literally just felt like this exhale that was possible in that moment of knowing I don't have to worry about that one need. In terms of somebody saying something, I think one thing I remember, I did begin grief counseling about 6 weeks after David died, and continued to do that on a weekly basis for over a year. It was just an amazing resource and the relationship. But the first session I had with my therapist, she skipped over all of the paperwork stuff. And she knew I was a therapist, so she didn't have to explain what confidentiality was or, go into some of those weeds. But she said, how long has it been since he died? And I said, 6 weeks. And she just looked at, she's like, there's no way this is real to you yet. Let's just start from there. And it gave me such a sense of permission to just be completely confused in a mess and not there is no place to start other than where I am right now. I don't have to know the path. I don't have to be able to summarize it took this pressure off and gave me a sense of, oh, you do get it. Yeah. I'm completely lost right now and I'm living this, but it's also not real. And then her being able to say, not how are you, but how is your heart today? How is your heart right now? And make it grounded in a particular moment. It's so much easier to connect with that, in my own body. Still, I've, when somebody's how are you? I'm even if they're not referring to a loss, just in general, I am the type of person that's struggling. What am I supposed to say? Am I supposed to be honest? Am I supposed to give it, I don't know. But if somebody says, how is your heart today, right now? It's so much easier for me. I'm kind of tired. Or, I'm feeling pretty light today. Thank you. You know, and have a real point of connection.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I think that question, how are you, is so loaded because nobody really cares. Like, it's more of like, just tell me you're okay so I don't have to worry about you.
Exactly.
You know, or else people think like, oh gosh, I can't say I'm doing amazing, because in a lot of cultures, if you say, oh my gosh, this, let me tell you, how am I? I'm doing amazing. I just got this. This just happened. This is up. And then people are like, oh, I don't want to talk to you anymore because you're the tall poppy and we're going to cut you down. And how did your yoga practice play a part in healing? I mean, that's not even a word, or acceptance of your husband's death.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely did, and it still does. Like, it's, yeah, so much of it is just showing up with regard to anything, you know, in life. If it's like a goal, if it's a recovery from something, a loss, a, you know, a health issue, like whatever it is, there's just no substitute for the continuous practice of something. And number one, it gave me a place to go. It was like a place that was, I mean, it was movable in the sense that like I could be at home or I could be in the studio, but it was a designated spot. It was a physical location that I could ground, get into my body, but also feel like I was doing something, like I was moving forward. I mean, grief is such a full body experience. So it's, I mean, trauma, they're separate but related, but my body shut down in so many ways that first 8 months or so before I walked back, you know, into the studio for that summer special, I saw a 2-week window when my kids were going to be in camp. And I'm like, I know I have to make a commitment with accountability to be in a physical place, so I will show up and reconnect with my body. But I needed to move again. My body finally had shed enough of the initial overwhelming pain that I knew I needed to move. And so just yoga allowing me to move through whatever that day was has been, you know, a really big part of it. And then as time went on, like actually rebuilding new strength in my body, that maybe even more than before, which was not my aim setting out. I just wanted to kind of recommit to my life and my health and whatever that was, that I was discovering I wanted it to be.
So you talk about feeling the grief in your body and then feeling the sense of moving. What does that feel like to you? For somebody that's not embodied, what would they experience?
Oh, I wrote a journal entry at one point, like describing this specifically. I wish I could remember exactly, because I knew I'm going to forget some of this. I'm going to forget some of the vividness of these different sensations. But I remember, I mean, I could locate it, the sensations differently in different parts of my body. So my head felt cloudy and heavy. Thoughts are foggy. Focus is really difficult. Breathing is really restricted. I mean, it just felt like there was a brick sitting on my chest. And before I went back into the studio and started practicing again that summer after Dad, I don't know when the last time I took a deep breath was, like during this first 8 months, you know. And I remember at times recognizing how difficult this feels to take a deep breath and really fill up. And I could know that, and I still did not have the energy to do it. Like it was so in the nervous system. Like it was almost involuntary, you know, and everything just felt really heavy. Grief just feels super, super heavy. And along with,
so my belief is that you have to actually get that energy out of your body. You know, like it's almost as if, it's a horrible analogy, but if you could think of being constipated and feeling that way, like you have to get that out. Mm-hmm. But with grief, it's almost like you have to move it physically out of your body whether, you know, you have to let it come up and feel it and then process it through, just as you would digest a meal or you would digest anything energetically, to be able to come back to that clear space.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think the really particularly frustrating thing about doing that with grief is we want it to be like with so many things. We want there to be a beginning and an end to the experience, particularly a difficult or unpleasant one. And so when the grief rises up and those sensations call for the movement to happen or to be addressed, they call to be acknowledged and experienced and felt. And then we do the hard work of sitting with it or moving through it and feel that sense of release. On the other side, it's necessary, and it's just like a drop in the bucket. Like it just, you know, it's over and over and over. And there's a real sense of frustration, right, that can build over time with like, am I not done with this yet? Like, I thought I did that already. It's like, oh. And so, I mean, the practice also just continues to ground me. And like, there's always work to do. It's going to look different every day, but there's always work to do. And letting go of the judgment of like, why is today harder? Why is the grief bigger today? You know, like just this year, earlier this month, I did. It was a celebration, what would have been my 19th wedding anniversary. 2 months before that was the anniversary of David's death. I cried so many tears on the day of our anniversary. And I don't think I cried maybe at all on the anniversary of his death. At first glance, I was like, interesting. Why are all these tears here now on this day, like that marks the greatest celebration of my life? And they didn't show up on the day of my greatest tragedy. I had a moment where I was like, I could make a story about that in my head, you know, and get caught in that and make some meaning, but I didn't. I just sort of like noticed it and I was like, they're both equally valid. It's just the work that was there that day. I'm just really grateful to be able to come back to the practice over and over and have those reminders, you know, through all the cues, like see what's here right now and then let go.
Well, if we think of yoga really about expanding your awareness, like it starts with the physical body, but as you begin to gain awareness of your physical body, where are you holding pain? Where are you holding resistance? Where is there tension? And then you can move through that and allow it to cycle through or begin to release the grip. That's where I think the work begins. That's where it's, you know, whether it's mental pain, physical pain, spiritual pain, whatever it is, we can begin to bring it into awareness. And in that sense of awareness, we can then begin to, if it's something we choose to release and let go, we can.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember a mentor of mine talking about developing response ability. Mm-hmm. And kind of, you know, when you're doing personal growth work, like that's kind of what you're after, is creating choices for yourself with whenever, you know, wherever possible. So your reactions aren't automatic anymore. You have that moment of separation to be able to distinguish, okay, this is what I'm experiencing from this is who I am, or this is what it's always going to be. And that opens up space for the choice. Yeah. To hold on. Cause there are things that I do choose. Like, no, I'm going to hold on to this. This seems like it has something left for me, even if it's, you know, the really painful stuff that I would some days just like to skip over. And then other days, you know, I'm able to see, yeah, that hurt or that trauma is there kind of looking at me, like inviting for me to just fall down the hole again and take it up. But I'm just, no, I see you and not today.
So how is it that you talked about, you know, using your experiences? How are you going to use this?
Oh, I don't think it's just one way. I mean, I think part of it is continuing to be open to opportunities that arise like this one, to use the platforms that show up and realize there's like, what do I have left to be afraid of, honestly, in stepping into new territory, letting go of like my experience is my experience and it's real and it's 100% true. And if I'm speaking from that, then how somebody else receives that and how that's used is off my shoulders. That's really freeing. But I've been a writer for a long time in terms of just how I process my experiences. And so I'm slowly working on turning my writings into a memoir. Just really feel like that is something I'm supposed to do. I don't know if, you know, I'll end up publishing it myself or if there will be a bigger platform for that that will come up. And, you know, I also do contract work with Wounded Warrior Project and providing the behavioral health, like licensed staff person on some of their retreat. That was an opportunity that I was actually connected to professionally through David and the work that he had done as a veteran in the local community, creating veterans networks in the corporate arena. Went through that process of interviewing and vetting with Wounded Warrior Project, completed that 4 days before he died. And then I had to put that work on hold, you know, to attend to my family and my own grief work. But I knew I have to come back to this. Like it's too important. And so I have. So I want to continue that as well. And then it's just was a beautiful sort of extension of that similar kind of work than getting trained through Love Your Brain and knowing how significant the traumatic brain injury experiences within the veteran community as well. And so there's just lots of ways, threads, you know, that are continuing to weave through my life that are related, but I don't know where it's all going to end up. Some days I'm impatient about it for sure, what the whole storyline is, but there's meaning being made every day through all this.
So when you, I know you have a unique blend of being a therapist, having experienced a lot of trauma, as well as your training with Love Your Brain to augment kind of the traditional yoga training. What is your focus in your classes, or what do you hope to bring?
Yeah, I hope to, more than anything, stay grounded in, you know, my personal experience of just being human. I do have a tendency at times to, you know, to want to get something right, but I think knowing that about myself and continuing to ground in, that's not what I have to offer. Like that's just maybe the icing on the cake, the knowledge that I have, but continuing to connect with people from a place of, you know, it doesn't matter what we look like. Like I may have a body that looks strong and fit like a traditional yoga body because of the background that I have as a gymnast or whatever, but I'm, or my age, like, but that doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of, you know, what I know as a person and my experience and what I have to offer. So I want to get to know people from a place of deep connection, that like bring whatever you have, because we all have it, and let's have compassion for that first and foremost. Like leave the judgment out. There's no room for judgment and transformation, but let's challenge ourselves too. Post-traumatic growth is a real thing, and there are real steps that we can take to not achieve that, but to cultivate it. And so I hope to be that kind of stand for people, you know, that they can come to my class and yeah, feel like it's okay to bring the scary stuff too, and then move through it, move with it.
Right. And I think that's beautiful. I think, you know, it takes something to be able to sit with somebody who has gone through a lot and to not, I'm going to say not be afraid, but really to not be afraid of that. And that's, you know, I think you had, just with the background you've had, plus being a therapist, that you've got that groundedness, that it's almost like a judgment-free awareness, but also a sense of nothing you can say is really going to scare me or make me run or retreat or worried.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to shock me. It's not right. I'll still be standing here. Yeah.
Right. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, I am so grateful for you, Laura, and for, you know, just your willingness to open up, because I think it's important, especially in these times of COVID cuckoo-ness, the COVID challenge. One of the trainers I work with, he says that COVID stands for confident of victory in in demanding times. Mm-hmm. And I like that meaning of COVID more than the traditional meaning of it. But I've seen a lot of collective trauma, maybe is the word to use, or stress or concern. What advice would you have for people in these times of uncertainty, you know, just things being perhaps different than anybody ever could have imagined?
It may sound easy, but it's not. And that would just be not to rush ahead and try to be in the moment that we're having and recognizing that there is still movement in it. You know, I've heard everybody, literally everybody in my life that I've had a conversation with, and strangers, I mean, that I, you know, hear posts or read things, they all say this is incredibly hard and unprecedented, and there are these blessings and these silver linings that I never could have imagined present themselves outside of, you know, these times that none of us chose and had no precedence for. And so continuing to acknowledge those blessings, to build on them in whatever small way we can. You know, like one example for me is I had more time on my hands, even though my kids were home, and I decided to buy a like 16 by 20 paint by numbers canvas. And I had tried at one point like free painting when I was going through cancer treatment. My therapist suggested it, and I don't know that it was a great success, but it was some like, because again, she was like, I don't know that painting looks complete. I'm like, I don't know what, I'm not doing it right. But it was, the point was the exercise and letting go and just flowing. I decided, you know what, I'm not going to put myself through that. I have to make something beautiful out of nothing. Give me the manual. I'm going to do one thing in my life that I can control. And so it's going to, you know, I'm going to make beauty like piece by piece or vast area by vast area, but it's going like, I can do this. I can pick it up when I want to, I can put it down when I want to. I'm still working on it like 4 months later, but it brings me such joy. Like, I don't think I ever would have thought to do that. So finding something that can be focused on that does bring a smile to your face or a sense of connection within yourself or with people that are most important in your life. I think that's really the only way through is staying connected.
Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate you sharing your journey with us. As you know, that my whole goal is to help people along their journeys and to help them live that biggest version of their life, whatever that is. It's always different for people, but I love seeing you step into that continually more and more. And I can't wait to see what is next for you on your journey.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Epic Journey. If you enjoyed this podcast, I'd love it if you'd subscribe and leave a rating and a review. I truly hope that you got something out of this episode that you can use on your own epic journey.